The 2017 AFL season is proudly brought to you by Toyota. Toyota Footy. Oh, what a feeling.
Triple M Footy is the number one football call on radio. And your front row.
For the Fiat Ducato with up to 15 cubic metres of cargo capacity. Move with more grunt. Welcome to the Triple M Saturday Rub for McDonald's McCafe.
Triple M rocks footy.
The bearded Ruffner with scores level. 1:36 on the clock. He's called now. 1:30 on the clock. Roughhead. He'll kick from 50. It'll take his best. Off the boot. Hands in the air. Ruffy has kicked it. Big goal from Jared Roughhead. 1:20 on the clock. One hand in the air saying, I am the man.
Oh, big Roughhead got the job done last night for the Hawks. Spiteful, fantastic game of footy. We absolutely loved it. Their season, is it still on track? What the hell's going on with the Swans? Are they any chance of playing finals footy now? We'll find out all of that with the best team in the business, Luke Hodge, to join us shortly on the back of last night's game. We're going to also speak to Matty Boyd. We've got Dear Brian. We've got a big lineup, but I just need to let you know, before I introduce this team, Bristol's Vault, about half an hour away, He revisits... one of the biggest names in sport and has a second go at it.
Oh, I've had enough.
He has a second go at it.
No, officially, that's it.
Oh, no. So we're going to do all of that. Hello to you, Duck.
Yes, gentlemen, listeners, good to be here. Good footy, wasn't it, last night?
Brilliant.
Another upset and, this season just keeps throwing up surprises, BT.
Oh, and happy birthday, we should say, too, Duck. You only turned, what?
34 today.
34 once. Which I think is official speak for 45. So happy birthday to you. Many happy returns today. Hello, Purple.
Hello, Jim. And we gave the Swans the win last night before the game was played, didn't we? And Hawthorn ended up with the scoreline of 4-6 that we just assumed the Swans were going to get. And they've breathed some nice life back into their season after that last night, the Hawks.
And Bristol, nice to see you.
Yep.
Back into town from Sydney. How did last night go? Did you enjoy yourself?
Oh, it was okay.
Okay, Whispering there. Brian, we understand down in the Hawks rooms. I didn't see it, but I understand it was of the utmost quality, especially the last bit.
Well, I don't know.
My mail is you snaffled an emergency from the Hawks.
Well, there were, what people don't know is there were, shut up, Duck. Shut up. I've had a gut for you. 24 hours enough with you.
What happened, BT?
There were two debutants last night.
Yes.
And I didn't know whether this guy coming towards me was one of them.
Yes.
I took it that he had a tracksuit on and a GPS sort of, singlet sort of thing on. I took it as he may have been one of them.
Right.
So I said to Hodgie, why don't you introduce me? And Hodgie's looked at me and gone, really? Yes. You want me to introduce you? And then all the players are over there going, look, he's interviewing this guy, you know. It was the emergency. who was never played again. He was off to do a lap of the Oval.
How did that interview go, Bristol?
Not that well.
Did you get anything out of him?
No, didn't get a lot out of him. He was staggered that we would bother to interview him.
Gold. I love all of that. Now, I tell you what we have got a little later on too, and it's the first time, Purple, this year that I'm wading into this territory.
Mm.
Nice little bit of something coming later.
Have you?
Yep.
Well, news.
Yep.
Ooh.
And it's good.
Oh, it's going to be
good. It's good.
Well-sourced.
Good news.
You know, with me, it's impeccable.
Oh, it's always. Never just take it to the bank, Jim.
Take it to the bank, and this one is about a big star who may just do something amazing. So I'll park that until a bit later on.
Okay.
I'll tell you what I loved, Duck, last night, is I don't know why the Swans have gone down this path in the last two or three weeks, but it looks to me like especially their young blokes have sucked on a gallon of tough pills. And last night they decided to take it up with Daniel Howe, who's playing his fifth game or something.
Mm.
And I'm looking at it going, what is this all about? I always think if you're going to go down the tough pill path, at least try and pick off the other mob's biggest bloke. But they go with a baby. Anyway, the bit I loved was Hodgie, who we're going to speak to in about 15 minutes, just waded in at some stage and grabbed our man, little Papa. And said, listen, Pappy, you pissant. If you want to take on anyone, I'm here whenever you want. And Pappa looked around and said, look, I don't know whether I want to do that, to be brutally honest.
It's a good point you make. There's a lot of spot fires, BT. It does make the game. There, a lot of the jumper punches weren't there and all that sort of stuff. Look, the young blokes know now, and this is why it is fake bravado. The one place you're safest is on the footy field. So you know you're not going to get hurt. The intimidation these days is not that type of intimidation. Yep. The intimidation is what Luke Hodge does, and that is when the footy's there and you're in front of it, he will go straight through the footy and straight through you if you're in the road. And I think some of their aggression, they certainly were nowhere near.
But a lot of that comes out of someone not going.
No, they were nowhere near their frantic best last night, as they were the week before. There was an incident last night. I wrote an article about him yesterday in the paper. Kurt Tippett. No, listen, there was a BT. There was one in the last quarter where Kurt Tippett went back. Yes. BT, listen while I'm talking.
Yeah.
And he just leant. He felt for the footy.
I actually pointed that out.
You did in the call. He felt for the footy rather than go back and actually take the footy in a crucial stage. Now, I'm not saying we've all done it.
Yep.
We've all done it. But I thought last night that, and I know they only won by a kick, but Hawthorn were harder.
But Bristol, I always think, I don't mind the bravado. It's obviously a big part of our game. And if you line up at the start of the game and say, right, we're going to take these blokes on and we're going to be physical with them, all of that's fine. But if you're going to do that, pick off their biggest bloke.
No, it doesn't work
go
that
after
way.
A kid.
It doesn't work that way, JB. You go after whoever you think is susceptible to that sort
but
of stuff.
But if it's a baby, what is that saying about you?
No, it doesn't mean anything. As Duck said, it's a safe field. No one's going to get hurt out there. You go after, I think, whoever is susceptible.
But if it's a brand new baby kid who's just playing his safe game, he's not going to impact the game anyway.
Doesn't matter.
I agree.
Anyone's a target.
I agree. If I'm a Sydney player, I go up to Luke Hodge.
Of course you do.
You know what? You chop the head off. You chop the head off the opposition's strongest player, and therefore that is real intimidation. If you can
get under his skin, not that
you're going to, mind you. He's probably a player that you know that you're not going to intimidate. But if you really want to be tough, that's what you do.
Tell you what, I wouldn't be out there standing in the goal square and going, where's Luke Hodge? I've got to go and find Luke. Oh, he's up the other end. I'll go and find
him. Worry about the footy.
The nearest guy will do. The nearest guy will do. And that's what happens.
But Bristol,
and a lot of these little stouches, you say, oh, it means nothing and it's got bravado. But they're born out of someone not going at the footy. So that's what starts them.
Okay.
And that's where the frustration and temper comes in. It's born out of someone not going hard at the footy.
But
it's not because they want to start a blue.
If you're preparing during the week to be physical, which often teams do, especially with the Hawks over the last 10 years, so they've said, righto, let's have a crack at them. Richmond did it famously in a game last year or year before. Yeah. Which I like, and the thing I liked about, I think it was Cochin, I can't remember, Purple, before the game started, a couple of them bashed straight into Hodge and Mitchell.
It was Cochin.
And I said, mate, perfect, because if you're going to do it, go after their big blokes. Look, don't go after the kids.
Anyone will do, JB, whether they're big or small, but the clearest way I could explain it is if you were on the field, I would definitely be going after you. Because
you wouldn't catch me, Bristol.
I would be having a notch on the belt.
You wouldn't have the wheels.
I would turn you into splinters.
You would have to catch me, Brian. That would be the thing.
Don't worry. It's a circle and the fence ain't that far away.
I've got eyes in the back of my head, Bristol. I know where you were at all times.
Just before you move off that topic, what you raise about the Swans is interesting. They got to 0-6, as we know, when they lost to Carlton in round 6. We do now know, just through speaking to people, that between that round 6 game and the next game against Brisbane, they had a lot of internal chats about we need to be tougher, we need to start going at our opponents, because we got ragdolled by Carlton, of all teams, in round 6. So in round 7, they smashed up Brisbane. We saw Buddy getting into a few stouches against North. There was a melee fine only handed down this week as a result of the skirmishes. They were tough, you called it, against St Kilda last weekend. And they come against Hawthorn last night. And look, there are reasons they fell short, but they continued that rough play, within inverted commas, at the man.
Hawthorn's ability, they controlled the game all night, Hawthorn, by the chip and the switch of the play. The one thing you've got to surely, Duck, take away from Hawthorn is stop them possessing the ball at half back and being able to switch to the fat side of the ground. You just can't give them that kick. Make them kick it down the line.
They've only lost 2 games in the last 30-odd BT when they've taken over 100 uncontested marks. One of those was this year against St Kilda down in Tassie where they got flogged.
The other one was
qualifying final. BT, to answer. Did you want me to...
Did they control the game or not?
Absolutely control the game.
Well, why don't you just say yes, Brian? You're quite right.
Well, what I'm saying is...
Instead of waffling on with all the crap you carry on with.
They control the game by taking uncontested marks, BT, by chipping the ball around and controlling footy, which is exactly what you just said.
Yeah,
but I was just putting a little bit more context to your statement.
And a smaller ground, you'd think, would be something that, where you could perhaps stop that easier than maybe at the MCG, where there's lots more space.
You can come up, and that's... If you look at the game that we saw Sydney play here last week against St Kilda, Kilda. That's exactly what they did, BT. They rushed up on the mark. They didn't allow St Kilda to play on. And then when St Kilda tried to pull the trigger through the middle of the ground, they were up on that player. So they got a lot of turnovers. That pressure and that real desire to do that wasn't there for Sydney last night.
Hannabry?
Yeah, Jim, this morning he's spoken to Fox Sports News, Nellie Meadow on Fox Sports News. And just to set this up, the two goals that the Hawks kicked in the last quarter, BT, as you called last night, were by the experienced players Burgoyne and then Roughhead. Roughhead took the mark, as we've seen this morning on replay, right on the 50-metre line. Dane Rampey was the nearest Swans player to him at that moment. What happened was, Hanbury then took the mark and as such stood closer to goal than he actually needed to. And this morning on Fox Sports News, he has been really open about the mistake that was.
Really disappointed. I didn't man the mark that 2 or 3 metres as I should have. I think, yeah, replaced Dane Rampey on Roughhead there and didn't clarify with either him or the umpire where the mark was. So that's a clear error of judgment from my point of view. And I'm extremely disappointed in myself. I didn't clarify that. And it's a... another stupid error that, like a few different things in that last quarter that shouldn't happen, and it was really disappointing.
Definite error. He should have asked the umpire where the mark was. Interesting that Jared Roughhead didn't, because maybe he sensed that Hanbury didn't know. So that was interesting. The other thing is two mistakes. The other mistake there is that, given the stage of the game, given that Ruff was right on the edge of his capabilities, another thing that would have made a difference, and certainly given that he kicks the ball quite low and on that sort of nice trajectory, is a taller guy on the mark would have made a difference as well.
Well, the two goals they kicked were both beyond the 50-metre line, and they both just cleared it by a matter of centimetres. Yep. And again, you talk about toughness, the mental toughness for Burgoyne to go back and kick that goal, to give them a sniff, and then the extraordinary mental toughness for someone who's already had to display those qualities for what he's dealing with outside of football, Jared Roughhead, to go and do what he did.
Did the same thing, Burgoyne, I reckon, there last year, didn't he? Off a step, real late in a tight game, kicked a goal that got him up.
Yes,
he's got a freakish ability to do that. Mind you, Bristol, we have for a long time been of the very strong opinion that the 50 at the SCG is not 50.
Not 50, it's 48.
No doubt about it. It's not because if it was 50, it'd actually go inside
next
the centre square.
Next time we go up there, we will measure that.
Measure it.
Yeah, we'll step. I'll take a tape measure up. We'll go out and we'll measure it because I don't think it's 50.
You so do the Swans, whispering Brian.
Yep.
Duck, you've been strong on them still being able to get there. Do you reckon they can now?
Yeah, really difficult.
Finals,
now.
We're talking.
Really, really difficult now for them, JB. I mean, the obviously mathematically we know they can. We all know that.
Yep.
That's not a puzzle. But they now, there's just no room for error. That game last night was a must-win game for them, I think, to make finals. Now I think it's too difficult.
Well, to get 13 wins is what you need. You're going to
12 and a good percentage.
Can only afford to lose two more games for the year.
And I don't think that'll happen given the evenness of the competition now.
So where does that leave Damo, the Sydney Swans list? Sydney Swans coaching staff, their whole footy department. Are they?
Yep.
Where they sit right now leave all of that?
It's they're good questions. That they have always ever since Paul Roos got there, John Longmire's taken it over. They've played for the now. They've recruited for the now. Tippett, massive deal. Buddy, big deal. They've starting to lose players on the back of that. Mumford had to go on the back of Buddy coming. We've seen them lose Mitchell last year. Reed's out of contract. Does he stay? Do they cough up Tippett to try and get something else in? Because they're going to need to. The positive, though, Jim, as we know, they blooded, was it 7 players last year, BT?
Yep.
And already, I think, 5 this year. Or numbers around those numbers anyway. So they're already
and they've used
looking for the future.
35 players, I think, this year already.
But they are a now team. They commit to being a now team. And as Duck said, at 3-7, it's unlikely that finals...
And the other thing is guys like McVeigh, hanging around the fringes, are they going to bother to play him again this year? They've shown in past years with O'Keefe and a couple
O'Keefe
of others
got that, ugly in the end.
When they think it's time, no matter what stage of the year. If they keep going the way they are, they're going to play young kids, and guys like that aren't going to play.
I think they've got a good list, and I think they've blooded players, BT, that have come into this side this year and have shown that they're capable at the level. And
I think
Parker,
we agree they've
Parker,
got a good
Hanbury,
list.
And all of those guys are still not even at the peak of their powers yet in terms of age.
Then I ask the question, if we all agree, and I think we all do with you, that they have a good list, is it the hunger that's dissipated then? You know that, and it's a very hard thing to...
Yeah, it's only they can... Yeah, and only they can... I think...
if like the Bulldogs.
Yeah, if you listen to what John Longmire has said. Now, this is a side, 13 or 14 years played finals. Is that right?
Yes, 13 or 14
13
years.
13 or 14 years. Yeah. Side that has been there so often. Only they can answer that. I guess we could quote John Longmire over the last couple of weeks. And he has said, when they are fierce at the footy, when they bring that type of game, they win games. I don't think they've been as consistent with that. Now, there's been reasons for that, bringing young guys in. So, obviously, you know, they're not as experienced at the level. But they all over the park, they haven't been as hungry or as fierce, as he uses that word, this year.
And, Doug, we need to factor in what happened last night. In the first minute, their prime mover, or one of their prime movers out of the back line, Jake Lloyd, went down for the entire game. Sam Reed didn't play after half time. And, okay, you can question Sam Reed's impact on matches, Jim, in recent times. But that's a soldier down. They had two guys they couldn't use for the entirety of the second half, and one guy they couldn't use for basically the entire game. You need to factor that in, BT. History says, don't you, with this current system of the rotations and the four on the bench, that's going to get you, and it did.
Yeah, we keep wondering when that's going to catch up, and we kept saying that during the game, but in the end, I think
got him.
He averages 30. Just Lloyd.
Yeah, he's been in great form. Hey, just one other thing. I just want to talk about Buddy. Like, you know, we were talking about him last night, and I know you're pretty big on this too, Duck, is that, was that one of the most, Bruce McAvaney said it was the most influential game that he'd seen, I think, Buddy play.
Yeah.
He just looked like, luckily, he only got 5 for Hawthorn. Mm. It did look like he was capable of getting 10.
Well, let's be honest. If he wasn't there, Sydney get beaten easily. Everything that he did last night, he was physical, he was strong, he was aggressive. I think he took 4 or 5 contested marks last night. Your Buddy doesn't normally do that. So his all-round game last night was just absolutely brilliant. It was just great to be there live to watch it.
I just wonder, I know we've got to get to Hodgie. I wonder, Duck, whether their game style's got to change, Sydney. I've been saying it for a long time. They park the bus. They absolutely hand territory to the opposition. I don't reckon in 2017 you can do that anymore. They've got to stop having these huge numbers behind and slingshotting forward, because teams are just better.
And for periods last night, Luke Hodge behind the footy for Hawthorn for too long, BT. There were times where he just controlled it back there on his own.
Unbelievable performance by the Hawks. They kept their season alive. They went into enemy territory and took the Chockies in a fantastic, pulsating game of footy. And we've got Luke Hodge, the champ from the Hawks, on the line now. Hodgie, welcome.
Yeah, g'day, guys. Thanks for having me.
Hey, mate. Very, very nice last night. An absolute must-win game, obviously. But I reckon you especially would have been really pleased with the way your boys went about it.
Yeah, I think if you look at the week prior with Collingwood, we actually played some really good football in that first quarter, but it really dropped away when the pressure, I guess, went up against us. We sort of panicked a little bit. And I think you get that with a young group that's trying to bond together. And the best part about it is I think we learnt from it throughout the week. We spoke about a few things that we didn't do so well. And then when Sydney came at us again on last night, I thought everyone was pretty composed. We knew what to do. Everyone stayed calm out there. And we ended up getting away with a good win after Ruffy's nice goal towards the end.
Hodgie, I heard you last night on Channel 7 when the roving Brian sort of caught you after the game.
And
we were talking about the niggle before the game. Were you surprised? I heard you say to Brian last night that you didn't start any of that, that they were the ones that instigated it at all, the Swans.
Yeah, I think they came out. I think it's a bit of push and shove normally between the two teams, but I think they had a clear focus to try and get pretty physical. And as I said, it was nice. I actually thought it was okay with football, because they weren't going overboard. It was just letting them know that if we get near the ball, they're going to try and hit us. And every time we made a mistake, they'd come up and give us a bit of a hit and let us know about it, which I think that's good for football. It's competitive. If that gets your team up and gets the blokes around you up and about, I can't see any harm with it.
Hodgie, I was watching at home. I wasn't in Sydney. I noticed that a few of their young blokes, little Papa being one of them, decided to go after a couple of your young blokes. Howie might have been one of them, just in their first sort of 4 or 5 games. What I loved is you, the old bull, just waiting in going, listen, you pissant, if you want to bring that anywhere, bring it at me.
Hodgie, yeah, you reckon he's got the lip reader service on that, and he reckons that's exactly what you said.
But he was actually pretty funny, some of the things he was coming out with. So that's where you got to give it to some of the sledges. They come up with some pretty funny stuff. But I think that's a natural thing, is if you're going to target younger blokes, And you've got to go and stick up for them. The only thing is, in the second half, I think they were starting to target me. And I that's the thing. What's going on? Leave me alone. but if that's the thing is, you try and come up with tactics that are going to either unsettle the opposition teams. And I think both sides, especially after having a bit of success for the last few years, are playing a lot of younger guys. So anything you can do to try and get under their skin or get an advantage, you're obviously going to do it.
Luke, the disastrous start by way of the 0-4 scoreline, the consecutive 86-point losses, you now look at the past 6 weeks. You've won four. Even go narrower than that. You've won three of your past four. What do you think could happen in 2017 now that you've stabilised what was happening initially?
I always believe that we're going to play better footy towards the end of the year than what we were at the start. But when you bring in a lot of blokes from other clubs, they've obviously been drilled for a long time on how their teams are played, and we're trying to change them in the space of a few months of pre-season. Your natural instincts kick in. Throw into the mix of a lot of the younger guys. We've got 6 to 8 younger guys that are coming in. So when they start to understand how we want to play, how to play with each other, I think last night, I think there was two guys over 100 games in our defence, in Gibbo and myself, and the other guys, three of them had played under 10 games. But that's the best part about that's the exciting thing in our future. So whatever happens towards the end of the year, so be it. But I just think as long as we keep taking those gradual improving steps as we've done the last 3 or 4 weeks, it's going to be better for us.
Yeah, and I know we on Triple M have asked you this question prior to now, and you're going to be asked it between now and round 23. Do you know? Are you any clearer in your mind as to what 2018 holds for you?
I'll be another year older. That's about all I know at this stage. But footy's a long time. It goes, a season takes longer, especially when you get pretty old. So I'm still enjoying my football. If it's my last season, well, I'm enjoying playing it. If I end up going around again, that decision will be made later in the year. But to be honest, it's the last thing on my mind. There's that much other stuff going on with how we're going and how we're trying to improve to think about what's going to happen next year.
Hey, Hodgie, I'm going to keep focusing on what happened on the ground because you know I love it. At one stage, Bud kicked. He had a big night too. He was absolutely sensational. He dropped one from downtown and then he went hunting a few bodies, and I noticed he bashed into Ruff and then he had a piece of you, and it looked to me like Gibbo also copped a little bit. So all his old mates he wanted some body heat with.
Oh, I think that's the funny thing with Bud. When there's a camera on him, he'll go and bump and be tough and intimidate, but as soon as the ball goes up the other end, you'll say something to him and have a bit of a joke back. So I think that's his Bud. He's a competitive person when he's in the moment, but as soon as the ball's out of his area, it's just good old Bud. You have a bit of a joke. But talk about a bloke who's 30 years old. I've got no doubt that he's the most dominant person in the AFL. I'm not just saying that from last night with how he did it, but for a person who's that big and that strong, there was one time I went to back against him and he put me on the deck and then he's taken the mark and brought around Gibbo. Luckily, he kicked a point, but he's a bloke at the peak of his powers at 30 years of age.
Yeah.
And even though I was playing against him, geez, he was good to watch.
He was unreal, Hodgie. I mean, you talk about, he is going to stand the test of time. He is going, last night he went into the top 10 goal kickers of all time. I'm sure he'll kick another 100 or two and push himself into the top 4 great names. We are watching history with Buddy, aren't we?
Like for someone, especially in today's game, it was different back in the day when you had a full forward just sit at home. Like he gets the ball up on the wing. I think I manned him when he kicked that one from 55. He's just so dangerous. And if he's not getting the ball deep inside 50, he'll roam around the wing and still outrun most of our wingers. So as just said about talking about some of the greats that have ever played the game, there's no doubt he's going to be up there. And the fact is, I think with his contract, he's still got 6 years to go or 5 years to go. So hopefully if he can continue with his body in the shape and the power that he's got at the moment, then it's going to be an exciting 4 or 5 years for the Sydney supporters, but also for the blokes that are watching him at home and the ladies that are watching him at home.
In regards to him, Hodgie, when you're that loose man behind, not often do you look around and worry, especially you. You've done it so often, you control that area. Is he one bloke that you have to know where they are? You know where you want to stand, but you sort of go, okay, Buddy's there, his opponent's on him, I'll stand here.
Normally, Bud was actually standing in between Gibbo and myself, and he was actually telling me to go left and right. And at times, I thought it was Gibbo. So he actually sort of knows a little bit of our structure, where we like positioning. But you're always cautious of a person who, because if he gets to the open side on Gibbo, he's not going to catch him. So you need to sort of position yourself smart enough. So if the ball gets kicked to the left, to the right, or in front, that you're there to help out a person. Because it's proven last night and throughout these last 10 years that one-on-one, no one's going to beat Buddy, or very few people have been able to beat Bud. So you need as much help around you, and that's why people have turned to more of a team defence rather than one-on-one these days.
And Bud's always given Gibbo an enormous amount of help off the field. Hodgie, was that happening last night as well? Did Gibbo just get around Bud to see if there was something else there for him?
I think he was following around like normal until he had to go into the Sydney rooms and they told him to piss off back there. But I didn't go after the game with that. I think they might exchange a text or two, but we had recovery and we've got a game next week. So I think the boys are on the way back to Melbourne and getting ready for next week.
A great goal late from your skipper too. What a moment that was.
Not bad, considering he wasn't allowed to get into the game, into the ground pre-game. He got knocked back by a couple of security guards.
He did.
I'm pretty sure we did hear the comment, "Don't you know who I am?" to get him to go back and slot it, yeah, you could always, as soon as he took that mark, he knew in his mind he could kick the goal. And you see your confidence of someone, as soon as that ball left his boot, I reckon it had gone about 5 metres and that right hand went pointed straight up, and it was a bit of a come to me, look how good I am moment. So
it was.
Were you aware of the? Were you aware of what Dan Henneberry's admitted this morning, Luke? And that is that he took the mark and was, unfortunately for him, closer to goal than he needed to be.
I only found that out when we landed in Melbourne. A couple of boys saw the article, and I think that's a genuine mistake because Henneberry's a pretty switched on footballer. Mm. But in that situation, there's that much going on. I know every coach that I've played under always want you to man the mark. If you can creep a metre or two, that's what you try and do. But as you said, in pressure situations like that, there's that much stuff going on. It's a simple mistake that Dan's made, which I'm pretty sure he won't do again.
Hodgie, we know you're on the bus, so we'll let you get stuck into that wonderful win last night. Well played. Good luck for everything coming up.
Cheers, guys. Have a good night.
Hey, one little stat just on that. Duck, we were talking about this before the game last night, not wanting to sour the Buddy thing because it was one of the most extraordinary five-goal games I've ever seen in my life. But he's set shot goal-kicking this year. All-time low in terms of conversion rate, 48%, really? Coinciding with the arrival of the goal-kicking coach, the great Tony Lockett.
Oh, no. Oh, wow. Hey.
Not suggesting anything. Not suggesting anything.
Yes, careful, you are. Bristle.
But sometimes, in fact, all of the time, you've got to let the player feel comfortable and do his thing when you teach someone to kick goal.
You said earlier today that you would turn me into splinters. The same would apply with Big Plugger. So you need to be careful.
He's amongst the finest interviewers of our time.
I'm ungettable.
When he's on the clock, Parko, Denton and Oakes take notice.
I am the man.
He's one of the best.
This is about me.
Is Bristle's Vault.
Must listen to radio. It's become Bristle Vault. By the way, Nick Revolt, we're going to have live in the box here. Same with Matty Boyd for fans of the Saints and the Western Bulldogs. And that late change Brian told you about, Jordan Roughhead in, Clay Smith out. All right. Bristle's Vault.
Now,
this is a casket of tapes that were dropped off at the Cloak of Darkness.
And they've been tracked. And I'm on to them legally. And there is... So you need to be careful the way you do this because we have confronted the stealer of the tapes. Who then unsold them.
Well, you say it was the beautiful Mrs. T, but you coughed them up at a garage sale, and therefore they ended up out in the ether. And this bloke's got them and brought them in and said to us, I reckon you probably should have a listen to what's in
here. Got about $5 for them.
I thought they were mousetraps I was selling.
Anyway, we heard very early in this series of Bristle's Vault, Brian go one-on-one with the great George Foreman. And, of course, during that famous interview, twice as he was live on air with Brian, he took a phone call to speak to someone else. And this is 1991, it wasn't mobiles or anything. So
and I was young.
He's taking a landline call from someone else mid-interview.
And recall BT saying, it's okay, I've got my coffee.
Yeah, got a nice warm cup of coffee.
Oh, he's a very busy man.
So what Brian clearly decided to do was go...
Go back.
And have a second look at George Foreman. So let's have a listen.
5 seconds, George Foreman. 1, 2, 3, 4. Welcome back to 3Z, the good sports. Well, boxing's been in the news lately with our own Jeff Fenwick. A lot of legal problems there as to whether he'll get a rematch with Azuma Nelson. Another guy in the heavyweight scene that's been in a bit of problem lately as well is former world heavyweight champion of the world, George Foreman. He joins us on the good sports now. Good morning to you, George.
Hello.
Well, George, there's been a few reports out here lately that you're having problems getting a rematch with Evander Holyfield, and I believe that you're even going to sue him for up to $100 million.
Well, that's a lot of $1 million, I tell you.
I spoke to you a month or two back, and you mentioned that, yes, you wanted to be the world heavyweight champion of the world, and you wouldn't give up until you were. However, you wouldn't hang around forever waiting for the shot. Now, how long are you going to wait for this guy, Holyfield?
Well, I'm going to be active for another year.
What about Mike Tyson? I mean, if Mike Tyson happens to... if this fight goes ahead and Mike Tyson beats Holyfield, have you been assured that you'll get a crack at him?
Pretty much. Hold on.
Okay. Yeah, George, you're back?
Okay, I'm sorry.
Have you had much to deal to do with Don King, and what's your opinion of Don King, the man himself?
I call Don King the Idi Amin of boxing, and I call Lou Duva Saddam Hussein. That's pretty much the way I feel about him.
Okay. We look forward to seeing George Foreman back in the ring fighting for the World Heavyweight Championship of the World. This time, not just fighting, but winning. So good luck to you, George.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Oh,
BT.
Well, so many bits I love, but when George gives it the, I'm going to be active for another year.
You're taking the fake laugh to a new level too, BT, in that one.
Young.
That is
very
cold.
Young.
And yeah. Even put you on hold again for a split second.
He did, right. It's just in mid-interview, he's paused again.
Oh, that is absolute gold.
This is illegal.
Why did you go back to him so quickly? It seems like a month after you first spoke to him. You just... We went back to the well.
Someone else must have fallen through.
I love his very hard hitting at the start.
Yes,
like,
yeah.
You're going to sue for $100 million. Yeah. There's no softening in the interview at all.
And I think it rubs them up the wrong way, Duck, because they give him nothing after it.
They just go away, yep.
And George's response, that's a lot of millions of dollars. I tell you, it's the Bristol. I know we spoke about it on the Rush Hour last night. The amount of people that talk to me in the street about Bristol's vault, it is the hottest topic in this city.
You won't convince me that we need to play anymore, Jay.
There's lots more, bro.
There's a swimmer that we need to get to the bottom of, BT.
Yeah, there is
Australian famous swimmer
at the time, and a famous interview. So that's going to be involved, of course. We can't wait for more of that, Brian. It's absolutely magnificent. By the way, as I said, Nick Revolt's going to be live in here, so we can't wait to chat to him. Got a very nice letter come in too, dear Brian. Matty Boyd as well.
What about at the start of the interview? He's talking about Jeff Fettick and how he's...
Yeah, Azuma Nelson.
He's suing. The big fella would be sitting back going, who's Jeff Fettick?
He probably would. I don't know whether George had too much vision of what else was going on in the world.
In the back row there. Yeah. Duncan, Damo. You sit up there laughing and you're cooking me up. But you two, you genuinely don't like each other, do you?
Who?
Oh, this is interesting.
There's a lot of tension between you and Damo. I noticed that you haven't spoken at all since we've arrived here today.
Interesting you say this, Brian.
It's only been an on-air chitter-chatter. Yes. There's been nothing off-air. You could slice it during the ads.
Yeah, that's it.
Just have a listen to this. This might just help us understand it.
Now, Damien, you're a fantastic newsbreaker in the AFL and you do a lot of good things in the media, but I tell you what you don't know. You don't know whether Damien Hardwick is proud of his team, and I can assure you that if he says he's proud of his team, he is. So maybe on this one, leave it to the experts.
Oh, this is on Talking Footy, of course.
Leave it to the experts.
And, leave it to the experts, says the Duck.
Provocative last line.
It was, Duck.
Well, my point was that you don't know what Damien Hardwick is thinking, and neither do I.
Was that, was that on your show during the week?
It was. It was on the show that is now rating way more than the Channel 9 one.
Oh. The Blowtorch.
And it was on the... And
that is not the case, but it was on the Blowtorch.
Oh, well, you're on the primary channel, and we're not. We're still rating.
Well, we just deal still in fact, and yeah, you're not rating Widnes.
Having a ratings off.
You can feel the tension. They are numbering off.
There's only going to be one winner if it gets real physical.
Yes, I'll concede that point. The blowtorch, okay.
No, that
little flickering candle on a birthday cake, I would have thought that.
Have a listen to this simmering.
Have a listen to this work.
It was, hey, you know what? I know they're trying to build this into something.
No, it's
well, there was a little bit of a, because the week before, remember, Damo said, you know, why did I have to come out and deny a rumour? And, you know, there was all, you know, in his media guide, that is a no-no. Ooh. And I explained to him why. And I thought, you know what, this is my chance. So, just,
is that what it was about? Okay.
So you and Damo have different
Is that a square
rules?
Off, yeah, really?
Well,
gee, I can't imagine that. But the duck might have different rules to Damo, operationally speaking.
Maybe next week you could compare my rules with Duck's rules as a segment, Peter.
Well, I might draw up the rules and just have a closer look at them, because I'm sure there'll be a degree of separation.
So square up, Jim, after all that.
Leave it to the experts. That's the bit that caught my ear. Leave it to the experts.
Clearly the bit that's got
throwaway
you.
Throwaway line. Well, I don't think you're happy with that, Purple.
No, well, I'm a bit worried that Duck might have softened since he's breakfast with Alistair Clarkson.
Well, funny you say that. Flew back with Clarko on the early morning flight this morning. What time did you get up?
I think he's nobbled you, though.
I went early.
And, had a good chat. No, he hasn't nobbled me at all, Damo. I can assure you of that.
I think you've softened your views on the world since.
He has stunned you.
You've backed off. You've backed off on saying
what
you think.
What I have done, Damo, is I've stopped trying to be you. A newsbreaker, and just being me, which is talk about football.
So you have backed off any
news? Well, you know what?
He's got to you.
Little gems.
I'll just give those to Damo and let him run.
It's time to talk to the superstar of the St Kilda Footy Club, of course, longest serving captain, which we absolutely loved because it shuts Spud up finally, but also absolute royalty as far as St Kilda's concerned. Nick Riewoldt, great friend of ours, and great to see you, Rui.
Yeah, good to be here, rather be down in the rooms, clearly.
Well, why aren't you? You've got issues with your knee. Is it the old stuff we used to hear about? We used to have it drained regularly, or what's going on with it?
Not quite. It's the same knee. I guess that, you know, the mechanics of it all, they link in together, the draining and the the build-up of fluid. But this is just a bone bruise that I guess with the knee that I hurt round one, which was the other side, maybe overcompensating a little bit through the left side. And it's just gotten to the point where it needs a little bit of rest. A week at this stage wouldn't do much. So the opportunity to bank it into the bye and have a couple of weeks off is too good to pass up. I guess sets us up really well for the back half of the year, which is most important.
So what do you do in that nearly 3 week period?
Yeah, rest is about all you can do for a bone bruise. So I've been off legs all week this week. The same thing next week, and then reassess and hopefully get up for the Adelaide game.
And you wait till the bye comes and goes before you work out what's beyond that? Is that pretty much what you do?
Won't do much sort of the next couple of weeks. Just really give the bone a chance to heal up as much as possible. They tend to be a little bit slow, those type of things. So, you know, there's a possibility it could be an extra week after that. But, again, just looking to the back half of the year and, hopefully finals, keeping all that in mind, it's a good chance to have a rest now.
And I guess, Rui, what it does enable the club to do is get a better look at Paddy McCartan, because Is it a fact that he's just got to play at the level? Is he got to be exposed regularly to it to really find out where he's at and what he's capable of?
Yeah, I think the same for any young player, really, but especially a key forward. We know they generally take a little bit more time. Tom Hawkins took probably 3 or 4 years till he really... What's that?
You did it.
Well, I actually played down back my first couple of years, and I think it's much easier for a young player to play behind the ball, get taken to the ball. So my first couple of years, people tend to forget I played at centre-half back.
I know he's only a young player, but people have made the observation, and only you can answer this because you train with him every day. Is he fit enough to play a key position role at AFL level?
Yeah, well, he's never going to be a centre-half forward like sort of myself or, you know, who hits the logos. He's never going to be that type of player. He's going to be more a full forward, you know, traditional, in the traditional sense where he competes
like
really...
Like a Hawkins.
Yeah, like a Hawkins. But absolutely, he's got plenty of scope in his game to improve, and fitness is one of those. you know, my fitness has evolved for 17 years. I'm sure your fitness was the same. You continually evolve and learn more about the demands of the game, and Paddy's no different to that. He's done some really nice things. Even last week, he did a few things within the game last week that we were really pleased with. But yeah, look, he's a work in progress, absolutely.
Is that a fatigue thing? When we watched him last week, watched the game last week, when he, because he has got a really good set of hands. Is that just a fatigue thing when he drops marks that he should take at this level? Because if that was at VFL level, he clunks those.
Yeah, I think so. It's probably a combination of fatigue, a bit of perceived pressure, that sort of stuff. And as you feel more comfortable at the level, you know, he'll start clunking those. That's one thing he does have, a really good set of hands.
It's a good thing when you've got good players coming in and out of the team. Josh Bruce, how's he handled the fact that he hasn't played last week or this week?
Yeah, oh, clearly disappointed, Brian, like any player, and you'd be disappointed if he wasn't disappointed. So he'll go back, and his work rate is something that none of his teammates would ever question his effort. But just his finish recently, he's been a little bit off. So to go back at the level below and really hone those things and give him a focus will be good for him in the long run.
And why are St Kilda better than they have been in previous years, do you think? What is it? Where is the improvement in your team?
Yeah, I think just the natural evolution of young players playing more footy. So, someone like Seb Ross, I look at in his fifth, sixth year now.
He's been great, hasn't
he?
Yeah,
he's had a super year, getting a lot of midfield time. And I really think our brand of footy as well just suits the way that the game is played now.
You've got a brand now, haven't you?
Yeah, we do.
You can really see it.
Yep, and I guess that's evolved, and we've become more confident in it the more we've seen results. Richo has been really strong with the way that's been coached. So, yeah, just our style, our high pressure, quick rebounding style, I think suits the way the game's played at the moment. We saw the Bulldogs go all the way with that type of footy last year.
Nick, when there's the game's biggest names like yourself and Luke Hodge, who we just spoke to, are in this stage and phase of their careers coming out of contract, we're intrigued as to what happens next. What can you tell us by way of that with you?
Nothing really. That mate, you know more than me probably. You got bloody sources everywhere. But I'm still really keen to contribute to the football club. I feel like my best footy this year's been still really strong. That conversation will, begin around the bye. That tends to be when the list, committee meetings tend to happen. And
are you someone who would like to know what you're doing in 2018? Rather than not knowing until the final game of St Kilda this year?
Oh, I think everyone would rather know. Yeah, absolutely. But I understand that, the any goings on of list management strategies and the need for those discussions to be really fluid and continuous. So, out of respect for the club, I'm sure they'll show me the same sort of respect, and it'll be a pretty, honest and open conversation as we move along.
And at times in the past, you have done some of these negotiations, or at least had these conversations in a way that other players choose not to. Will you do that this time?
In what way?
With your own future and your own contract.
Yeah, but how have they been different?
I think most players let their manager do it. Some people aren't hands-on what I believe you to be.
That's probably fair. And I guess that speaks to a really healthy relationship with the football club as well. And certainly with Richo, those discussions have been pretty similar every year from us. He's just told me the way he sees it, and I've told him the way I felt. So, yeah, I've got a manager that will take care of the contractual side of things. But as far as having open and honest conversations on the way through, that'll be the same.
So first and foremost, you're just looking for a commitment, yes or no? Forget about the dollars and stuff that go with it. I just want to know where I am.
But there's no rush on that. I'm certainly not banging down their door saying I need to know tomorrow. Again, the club will have their discussions over the next couple of weeks. Joey's in a similar situation, coming out of contract, and we'll probably learn more in the next month or so.
That's an important factor in all of this, because I think that's where the Kangaroos got it wrong with Boomer Harvey and people, and that's what got swept under the carpet a little bit, Damo, is the fact that he went in there demanding BT. He wanted to know. He needed to know, and therefore the club in the end said, well, okay, we'll tell you now. Then it's going to get out. And that's why it blew up. And that's why it blew up in the wrong way. So the way Nick's approaching it is the right way.
Mm-hmm. Hey, tell us with you, mate, Joey Montagna, and we love him here, of course. A big part of Triple M footy. Does he plan to play on anyone at any stage this year, or is he just looking at like a Paul Roos or someone and saying, I want to finish my career going nowhere near an opponent?
And he's exclusively become just a kicker.
Has?
Give it to me.
Yep. Gee, it's a good role, isn't it? What a great role. Now, really, the Bulldogs have been an inspiration, I think, to a lot of teams, particularly the way you set up in the back half. So we played them, I remember, early in the season last year, and the way they set up behind the ball, they had two blokes running in off the back of the square that were half-backs that had absolutely no regard for the half-forwards they were playing on, and it worked. I mean, they went all the way and won a flag. So teams are being far more aggressive than we've ever seen in the game with the way they're using their damaging halfbacks. Yep. So I play a lot Montagna for us, or you know, Johannesson for the Bulldogs today. So it's a great role, and I guess speaking to Joey specifically in the impact that he's still having on the competition is that teams are coming for him. So teams are setting those defensive opposition forwards for Dylan Roberton and Lee Montagna. So he's still in great nick and enjoying his role. Yeah.
And specifically with today, with Jordan Ruff at a late inclusion, Nick, at the expense of Clay Smith, obviously that bolsters their big man department. Do you feel now that they've done that, that is an attempt at that part of the ground to exploit the Saints?
Oh, I think we're really well matched up down there. Brownie and Jake Carlisle have been in great form for us. So, yeah, no, that I think that works pretty well for us. Dylan Roberton's deceptively tall. He's taller than me. He's 194. So, you know, he can play on a stringer or someone like that.
Hey, as we let you go, Rui, I'm interested in this. The club's coming back to Moorabbin after a stint down the coast a little. As you know, for the best part of a decade, I was a Brighton resident during the halcyon days of the Saints. And you'd drift down Church Street, Purple, and you'd see, well, not only the great man here, but you'd see a couple of his underlings.
Yep. In pod.
Dal Santo.
Spud.
Spud was never allowed. Big Goosey Maguire, BJ Goddard, real try-hard, good-looking sort of wanker styles. Now, what interests me is when you go back there, Rui, you're going to be bringing a bogan like Jack Stephen. Haven't had a mullet.
He's from Lawn.
Haven't had a mullet on Church Street for 20 years.
I think he's the only resident of Brighton with a chicken coop in the backyard.
That's
as well.
It. Yep. Membry with the tats, old meatball Minchington. Yeah. These boys can't get onto Church Street. They're not allowed.
No, well, they've been further down the high, they've been hanging out around Chelsea, so they'll need a day pass.
They will.
They'll need a day pass if they want to come up.
They will.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very exciting, though, getting back to Moorabbin, back to the heartland. There are a few cafes down around there along Hampton Street that great food and good scenery too, James.
Don't worry. I used to wander into one, especially where you could get lovely takeaway pasta, and I used to see half of the St Kilda team in there because there were three or four girls freshly out of Lauriston or somewhere serving Bristol, and they were 11 out of 10.
Come
and
on,
I'd be standing there, and in they'd come one after another. Gee, the food's popular here.
Pasta was rubbish, to be honest.
Hey, Rui, great to see you, mate. Good luck with everything, with your own fitness and a little break mid-year.
Thanks, boys.
We need to do some news, Purple.
Yes, let's bang through a little bit, Jim.
We need to bang through a bit of news, and I've got something. As you know, I don't go to here very often.
No, but when you do, you're always on them.
In fact, the last sort of 9 years, I haven't been able to go there at all, Bristol, given another hat I've been wearing.
This better be interesting.
But I don't have that hat on anymore, so I can wander into this space.
Well, I think we'll start with yours, Jim, because I don't know exactly what you're going to say, but I do know who it's about.
I have heard, Brian, from a very, very, very good source, the following. Jesse Hogan's, and this is great news, by the way, Jesse Hogan's operation has been an absolute success.
Yes.
A complete success.
Good news.
In fact, so well has the operation gone, my mail is he is a big chance of playing Queen's birthday.
In how many weeks is that?
Well, that's three weeks after the operation that'll be. So that's massive. If that's the case,
so it's
JB,
round
that's
12, BT. I'm just looking at the it's your sheet here.
That's massive news.
Bristol, I'm not saying pencil him in black ink. I'm just saying that he is a big chance of playing in that game if what I'm hearing is the case, and that is the operation's gone as well as it
is. And that is massive news, because if that's the case, that suggests that even if he doesn't play in that Queen's birthday weekend, it'd only be a week away.
He's close.
It'd be a week away after that. So my understanding is, and you probably know
you're
this,
closer to him than anyone.
I haven't spoken to Jesse for a long time. I've sent him messages to say get well and all that sort of thing. But my P people say that he's been in Perth. He's gone back there to recover, but he is coming back to Melbourne this weekend. So he will be back in Melbourne this weekend. So that, given what you just said there, that would suggest that hopefully he's back, get some training into him this week, and who knows? Wouldn't that be a, wouldn't that be news. Fantastic? Massive. Wouldn't that be great news if he was to run out on Monday week?
Fantastic news. That just on the medical thing, JB. Yep. Can I ask you about Angus?
Yes.
Reading during the week a little bit about him and the concussion and what they're going to do with him for the rest
of the year. 5 weeks.
What is the state?
Yep. Five back training, but not doing the contact. 5 weeks they're going to give it, is my understanding. And in 5 weeks' time, which obviously has that bye included in it, they're going to revisit everyone, the neurosurgeon, club doctor. They're going to all get back together and go, right, how are we going with this? Are we going to reintroduce him into full training with a view to him playing again soon? Or is his non-playing time going to extend? So right. There's a five-week marker put on it where they go, right, oh, we'll come back here and...
This is Angus Brayshaw we're talking about.
And if it doesn't go the right way for him, Jim, after that 5 weeks, would you think, given that would put it into the 13-14 round time of the season, is it then possible that he parks it until 2018?
This is my question, and if Doc Rowan White was here, we'd be able to ask him. But what I don't understand with it is, let's say in 5 weeks' time, the answer is, yep, all good, resume full contact and then play... you know, rounds 17, 18, 19, whatever it is, 2021, whatever. How different is it if you were to receive another concussion in round 21, let's say?
Yep.
How different is that to parking the season and getting one in round two next year?
But I don't think they know the answer to that either.
That's quite right.
That's the great unknown.
It's the thing with the whole thing.
Yes.
They don't know.
Yes.
So, therefore, is there any point wiping the season off? If they're just going to be the same, probably there isn't. So, they're questions I can't answer. But I know there's about a five-week marker in the diary.
How many concussions this year?
Two this year on two last year.
Right.
So, and the two this year were pretty close together.
What I would like to know, and I know we're adjudicating it and the doctors are more cautious now, BT, but have we had more this year than... ever before?
I think we're just onto it more. Yeah, and the doctors,
that's what I mean. Is it because we're more cautious?
Yeah, and we're seeing it more because the doctors are making them stay off the ground.
Yeah, okay.
You know, a la last night.
So the numbers would be
way up then, given that. Yeah.
I mean, Jake Lloyd 3 years ago would have played that game out, wouldn't he? Would have got up to the next contest, let alone miss the remainder of the game he was just started.
And with Angus, neither of his have been stretcher knocked out. Yeah, but they've both been sort of dizzy.
Dazed.
A bit dizzy. But because of his history, they say, right, that's the end of you, not only for this game, but for the next 2 weeks. So they're much more careful.
It was interesting what Longmire said about Reid last night. He was about to run out after half-time and looked up at the screen and it got fuzzy on him.
Yeah, because he went back on, remember?
Yeah.
He went back on for a little bit and then half-time came around and then went to go back on and had fuzziness and then didn't go back on.
All right, speaking of injuries, lots in the comp. Jager O'Meara probably the most focus.
Pushed him back till the round 13-14 period, Jim. It's interesting, the Hawks here, because they were very defensive, as medicos are, and we all acknowledge what they do. But it is now getting a bit late in the season, BT, for something that wasn't meant to be an issue and something they kept telling us was very minor and under control. And as we know, it was round three when he first got the knock this year against Gold Coast. And then missed a couple of weeks, came back and didn't even get through the game that he came back in. So now he's out for beyond the halfway point. So it is an issue and one that I don't think they've been totally up front on, but I'll let them deal with that because the setback has been significant enough for bloke Jim, who has not played, or until this year anyway, for the previous two seasons.
Cramery?
Yeah, Cramery out for the year. Significant hip injury there, sustained or worsened in a recent VFL game. And you do feel for him, don't you, given that he missed last year with the drug ban in the grand final, came back into round one this year, BT, missed games after that for probably form and team structure.
How old is he now? How old is Cramery now?
Look, I think he's he'd be near the 30, but importantly for him, as far as I know it to be, Duck, he's got a contract into 2018, so as far as I know...
I'm not saying he's finished, I'm just... It's a concern to miss two whole years in a row.
Josh Shackey?
Shackey is, as we speak, in Seymour with family. It's a club granted time away from the game. Both seniors and reserves are playing this week, but they thought they'd tack this week onto the bye period for both reserves and seniors next week. Given he's only not even 1.5 years into his career and can't yet get his head around the possibility of staying with Brisbane, we know the way this plays out from here.
Do you read more into the Shackey situation than has been levelled at the moment?
I'm reading a lot into it.
Yeah.
What are you alluding to? Because there's angles that spin off it everywhere, BT.
It appears to me that the decision's probably already made there.
That's what I think the club feels. Well, the club thinks that. Now, they're not going to say that publicly, right. But the club thinks that. I've got a view that Chris Fagan, if he doesn't soon get an answer that Josh will want to play with his club into next year, I've got a feeling that Chris Fagan, I think he's more than entitled to, if he wants to go down this path, is, okay, fine, Neefel for you for the rest of the year, or we don't want to see you again.
I think he'll definitely be in Melbourne next year.
Yeah. And Richmond is still, as they've been, Jim, Duck, BT, for some time already, the front runner on him. But the money that they're prepared are going to need to cough up is not what it was by way of the fight for him as recently as 6 weeks ago. There's still going to be a bidding war for him, but the money has certainly reduced significantly on what he's produced this year, which is nothing. Missed the opening rounds with injury, then didn't perform, and then as recently as last weekend managed only four touches in the Neefel.
All right, we'll get to this because it's necessary every day to approach Brian with stuff that we get off the internet. Let's hear this first.
When you've got a problem...
Don't make a big deal.
...and you need a wise head...
I must speak.
...there's only one man who can help.
You talk. You nitwit.
Welcome. To Dear Brian.
Thank you, Brian. Dear Brian at mmmthercapitals.com.au. You can write us an email. And,
get the feeling they make these up, Doc.
Well, have a listen to this one here. This is coming from Susan, who's out there in Templestowe. I'm a single mother, two young boys, 12 and 10. The younger one, Brian, worries the hell out of me. Even at this young age, he lives life to the fullest. I fear he's going to be... He's only 10 this one, yep. I fear he's going to be like this for the rest of my time. I was made aware only last week that unbeknownst to me, he had been forging my signature on his homework for the last 2 months. What should I do? Thanks in advance, Susan.
Well, Susan, I actually don't think you have a problem. Just be careful.
It's illegal, BT.
Just be careful and make the odd check that he's actually not knocking off money out of your purse at the same time. I would regard this as normal 10-year-old behaviour. Be surprised, Susan, if he's lighting up at some stage as well.
He's 10, BT. No.
And don't be surprised whether he's been down to the local store and done a bit of the old five-finger discount as well. Because this is all part of being a 10-year-old. And most 10-year-olds have a lash at most of these things at some stage. In fact, Susan, you're the problem. Relax. Encourage low-level fraud.
Oh, no, Brian.
This will create a pathway to brilliance.
Come on.
Bill Gates style. Who knows? You could turn into one of our corrupt pollies. This is all good breeding, I would think, Susan. So back off, Susan. You're the problem.
No. Jim, we need to get
encourage low-level fraud. I don't think we should do that.
No. just a suggestion. I'm not suggesting you follow the advice.
A couple of bits of news still to get through with you, Damo. Let's quickly talk about the bounce with the umpires. How much longer has it got left in the game?
If you want the umpires, Jim, to control what happens from here, that won't be by round one even next year. It'll be done as of this year. But there's a bit of a political play at play, BT, on the back of the occupational health and safety revelations of the week. And
never heard so much crap in all my life.
It's real, BT. It's a real medical case.
They want it out.
Yeah.
It's got to do with inability to do it. That's what it's got to do
with. Well, whatever it's got to do with it, that's, right now it's a medical issue with the AFL has acknowledged and is dealing with, and there are legal people at the ready on both sides of this, so that's the next phase of this.
Stating the facts of what you know, and that's fair enough, but I think the actual, you know, it's just crap.
That's the opinion side of it.
This is the umpires making the pathway clear for future umpires that perhaps...
Which is pretty important. Is it pretty important for a career pursuit?
Yeah, but our game is unique and we need to retain at least some of the uniqueness.
Would it be worth... because I'm with you, Bristol. I love it. Would it be worth... so that it doesn't go completely, would it be worth at least starting every quarter with the ball bounced?
Of course it would.
Why?
If you're at least going to hang on to it. Because I just love the theatre of it. Four times a game. You start the quarter with the ball. Well, because I love it. I would love it not to be gone from footy. I love the whole theatre of the umpire holding the ball up and then bouncing it. I think it's just a brilliant thing.
And using your body. You know, it goes 1 metre to the right, so you've got to adjust the body. We get a throw up, it's just going to create you cannot play in the ruck unless you are a jumping machine.
Like, it ends up like a tip-off in basketball.
Absolutely.
Yeah, look,
they've just about got rid of the tip-off in basketball. It's a waste of time.
The recruitment and retention of umpires, they're boring words for us on Triple M Footy, Jim, as a rule. We would not normally go down this path, but it is part of this overall picture of whether the bounce is retained, and they have identified the lack of recruitment in recent times, BT, on a fear of prospective umpires being unable to bounce.
There's a way around it.
Well, there's not, because the numbers have dwindled to the point where it's almost crisis at the people coming through.
To help those numbers, and because they are low, let's have one in three bounce the border. So today we've got three umpires here. All we need is one of them to be able to bounce. And if we put one bouncer in every group of three umpires around Australia this weekend, that'll be suffice. Mm. And that means that only 30% of the umpires that come in have to be able to bounce the footy.
Surprising, Bristol and Purple and Duck, that it's a skill that they're finding hard to get right when you look at boundary umpires who are unable to throw the ball over their head.
That'll be occupational health and safety next. What a load of nonsense.
Hey, moving on from that, the match review panel is another thing that gets us scratching our head on a weekly basis.
Yeah, it did. And even the narrative around the decision to not suspend Cunnington last week for his hit on Vince. I know you had a view on that, Jim, but
which I shared with Bernard afterwards too.
Not happy, Bernard, and you might have a payback coming your way
Bristol,
on Monday night.
I said on the rush hour, I've never seen a man go more pathetically to ground in all my life.
Yeah.
And then I rang him straight after the show finished and I said, Bernard, this is what I said on air and I'm going to say it even more forcefully now. What the hell were you thinking? He laughed and said he actually got me when I wasn't watching.
Yeah, he got him in the solar plexus.
He said I wasn't happy when I saw the vision back.
But he'd been toughing it up all game too, Bernie, so I reckon he got his right whack.
I'll remove that out of this conversation because...
All right, let me just ask Duck this before we move on.
Yeah,
did you ever in your 240-game career, did you ever go to ground on the back of someone punching you in the guts? Did you ever end up on your knees?
Not that I can remember.
Do you reckon you would have?
No, I can't remember faking going to the ground.
No, I can't.
If you got hit hard enough, you went to the ground.
You can get hit in the solar plexus there, and it can stun you.
And I probably have, but it would have been because it hurt, not because I was faking.
I'm not sure Byrne was either.
Oh, Jim, I don't think he was faking. I actually think he got him for sure.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm not saying he was faking it. I'm just saying that it was about a 4-incher.
Yeah. Anyway, you get hit in the right spot. I agree.
And then down on his all fours on the boundary as well.
4 inches are the best though, JB. The shorter the punch, the better.
Real Bruce Lee style.
What? Anyway, we finish on MRP.
Yeah, on the rub, we don't get too bogged down, do we, in the nitty gritty of these type of issues. But I thought it was a really poor week from the AFL's perspective, Jim, where they kept telling us on the back of Cochin and then Cunnington not facing any serious consequence to their actions, saying that the match review panel guidelines didn't allow them to actually suspend them. Well, guess what? They did, and they've now admitted they do. So, again, it's just posturing by the AFL unnecessary posturing by hiding behind their own rules.
Do you think any of that we see this week will result in a much stronger reaction?
Yes, there will be 1 week suspensions for the people who do it this week. And you know what? That's fine. Just don't be silly enough to do it because you've now seriously been warned.
Yep. All right, let's get to the social media feedback at Triple M Footy, Facebook, Twitter.
Yeah, before we get the reaction to BT's vault and all that sort of stuff, we'll just say, so Matt Hume on the topic we're just talking about, keep the bounce for the opening of the game, scrap it for the rest of the quarter, keeps everyone happy, simple. Mm-hmm. And that's probably what I think most people think there.
No, it's not.
Well, it is, I think.
No. Don't you answer on behalf of people.
Okay, well, I'm...
Because you're far from people.
I might really change some of these comments here now.
Yes.
just on...
And highlight the plugger one, maybe, Doug.
Just on Facebook, Heath McCullum says, heavy world championship of the world. Boy. Andrew Hook loved it. 5 minutes of gold every Saturday. Ha, ha, ha. Barry Denner, another golden nugget.
The people's
very
caller.
Happy. Yes. Now, there's some very happy people here with BT. They think he's going on
Baz
very, very
good. On social media.
On Twitter, George Templeton says, Oh dear, it sounds like Foreman is having a conversation with someone else and doesn't know he's talking to Brian. Lee Molden says, was there a shortage of elastic bands during Brian's 3UZ days? Oh dear.
Oh, no.
Here we go. Brian Patton says, to be fair, that's the skinny, healthy plugger. I tell you what, there's a few people lining up here for Brian in terms of what he said about plugger.
It's a very explosive statement what you said, BT. Said that he has taken Buddy Franklin, who's now the 10th highest goal kicker in the history of the game.
Yeah.
You said he's taken him backwards.
No, I didn't.
By way of set clock shot.
Do not put words
in
my mouth.
What did you say then? Repeat it for our many hundreds of thousands of listeners.
I simply said that Buddy this year with set shot goal kicking is the lowest of any year that he's had in terms of conversion rate.
And what's the difference this year to
the year? And then I said, and Plugger has arrived this year as his coach. And that's all I said.
So because of of that little, the prize goes
to $200 share on Brian Spanker.
Chris Vance, who says, well, if BT blames Plugger, this is what happens to Nadia and co. after being interviewed by the big man. Bang. Chris Vance is the winner of the football.
A brand new Sharon Footy valued at $200. Well done, Duck. And thanks to everyone for the feedback at Triple M Footy, Twitter, Facebook or Instagram. We love it every week. Now, Doc, Rowan White, I think, joined us. Hello, Doc.
Hey, JB.
Hey, a couple of things we need to chat to you about. Yes. Firstly, I spoke earlier about the fact that my mail on Jesse Hogan is that his operation, which is fantastic, has been an outstanding success.
Great success.
To the point where we may see him on Queen's birthday.
Well, it is extraordinary, JB. I mean, the surgical techniques for this sort of operation have come a long way, and we understand that the growth was removed with the tumour, and that is considered a cure. We also understand that, you know, the other tests have been all clear, so this is a great outcome for Jesse. So what it comes down to is just how long it takes for him to recover from the surgery. Now, I can take you back to Pat Cash. I don't know if you remember this. This is about 20 years ago. When he had an appendectomy, he came back playing tennis in 10 days. Not saying that that's going to be the case with Jesse. But it's just about the wound healing, about his getting his fitness back, of course, because he is taking 2 or 3 weeks off after the procedure. But look, it's not inconceivable, JB. And what a great outcome.
Well, this is only what we're hearing. Now, the other thing the boys were talking about, my nephew, Angus, and concussion. And we were... My mail again is that it'll be about 5 weeks they're going to have another look at whether he can come back into full contact and then when he starts playing again. The question I asked is, with these concussion situations, what is the story? Let's say he comes back, plays round 20, and then in round 22 he suffers another mild concussion. Is that any different to having the rest of this season off and then getting another mild concussion round 2 next year?
Yeah, I could see your argument, JB.
Well, I'm just asking if they differ in any way.
Look, I think what we can take from all of this and what's happened with concussion in the last few years, it is not an exact science. It's not like doing your hamstring.
Yeah,
and one thing that the doctors are doing extremely well is making the diagnosis and being very conservative with the treatment initially, which has changed a lot in the last 10 years, as we know. And we do know that cases such as Angus and others are getting into the research program, which is being run by the Florey Institute, the Austin, because we need to know more about it. So without speaking about his case precisely, one, the diagnosis is better. Two, the conservative management is becoming better.
Yep.
But thirdly, when to return is still the fuzzy area. We're just not sure. But you know what? Keeping him out for 5 weeks, whether he plays at the end of the year or waits till next year, it's really 6 of 1, half a dozen the other. If he's over it, well, there's no reason why he shouldn't play.
Just to let people out there know, can you be stunned and not concussed?
There's a grey zone between the head knock and concussion, Brian, and that's what this research is trying to find out.
Because 5 years ago, we were telling everyone, he's stunned, that's why he can go back on. Are you saying now that is now going to be ruled by most doctors as a concussion?
If you have any condition, such as when you see stars, whether you're stunned, whether you have a visual disturbance, then that is an injury to the brain, a so-called concussion.
This is my point from 5 years ago. We were letting them go back on and saying to people, they'll just stunned. It's not real concussion, they'll just stunned. So they've changed, JB, in 5 years. This shows, not you, Rowan, but the people working on this, there are no real significant answers to it.
It's not an exact science, but we're learning more and more about it as time goes on, Brian.
Very good. And the hair, you got the front of the hair tipped?
The tips. I've tipped them grey.
Well, you'd know. You'd know, BT.
Have a look at it.
Well done, Doc.
Matty Boyd is joining us. Welcome to you, Matty. Thanks for coming up to the box.
Nice to be here, boys.
So what is it, the shoulder?
Yeah, just popped the shoulder out, a sublux, I think they call it,
yep,
against West Coast. So just trying to rehab that and get it strong again and hopefully back after the bye, or not too far after the bye.
Okay, what about the Dogs this year? Where do you see them fitting at the moment? What's the ingredient, if you could say there was one ingredient that's missing that you had or that you need for success, what would it be right now?
It's a pretty good question. It's hard to put your finger on at the moment. We're probably not taking the risk with the ball that we have in the past, and maybe last year we were able to, I guess, take on a little bit more risk through the middle of the ground and connect a bit better going forward. So we're giving ourselves opportunities inside 50, but we're just probably not capitalising and getting the better shots on goal that we need.
And so guys like Johannesson, just on that, off half-back, being sat on this year by defensive forwards. We're talking about it with Nick Riewoldt before. It's a tough situation for them. They've got to find a way around it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, those high defenders that we have are really there as playmakers, and clearly number one priority is to defend and get the ball back. But, you know, we generate a lot of run and bounce off our half back line. So when guys start sitting on those players, it makes it difficult for them to do that.
It is hard to do against you guys, though. That's the real strength of this team, yeah. BT. So you're just going through their defence, and when you're back there, you're one of those running playmakers as well. But you look at Murphy, Suckling, Easton Wood, intercept marker, Johannesson. Adam's a really good intercept marker as well when he's going. Morris is probably the closed down player down there, but that's about it. All the others are very creative and can give you that run off half back.
Yeah, and that's something we've built our, I guess, a really strong part of our game on, is that ability to bounce off half back and that counter-attack style of footy. Like most teams, we'd obviously prefer to win it back in our forward half. And I think last year what we were able to do is be a real front half turnover side. So hopefully we can get back to that.
And on your list, you better add Matty Boyd to that.
I just said you're one of those guys. But is that why Cloak misses out? No, look, there's nothing. Redpath, we know, is coming back from a knee, Rico. He was always going to have his ebbs and flows. Had a really good game first back. Struggled the next couple because of obviously coming back from the knee, as I said. But it's about that forward pressure. I don't think you can afford to have Boyd, Redpath, Cloak all in that forward line at the one time.
Oh, look, it's a huge part. And I think one of the big strengths of St Kilda, and something we've got to be mindful of, is their ability to press in that forward half. And yeah, they're small players around the crumbing sort of situation. So it's going to be a real challenge for our defenders and our midfielders to transition the ball outside our defensive third. But you're right, having too many tools in the front half means you've probably got good options to kick to, but once the ball hits the deck, you're in a little bit of strife. So it's a real multi-role that those forwards have to provide.
But having those two blokes out allows Tim English to come in, who's a ruckman, who you've tampered with your ruck work. I mean, you've had Ling Jong going up in the ruck a couple of weeks in a row, but Tim English used to be a midfielder. He's 205 centimetres, and he can run like the wind.
Yeah, well, I think he's only just had a recent growth spurt, so he's played as a midfielder all the way up through his under-18 sort of career.
And big growth spurt.
Yeah, pretty
up
big.
Up to 205.
Yeah, when you get to 205, you've generally had a pretty good growth spurt, I reckon. But he's got really good midfield sort of craft and sense. So I think what we'll see from Timmy is his ability to go and pinch hit in the ruck, but also play a few different roles throughout the game as a forward and maybe up around the midfield as a winger. And, you know, we'll experiment with that.
It's a real different looking Nipsey too, Tim English.
yeah.
We had Dale Morris in on the Rush Hour recently, who said that he has forgotten the amount of times that he gets halfway through a conversation with someone at the Western Bulldogs fan or even staff, and the guy...
I know where this is going.
Whistle. Dale says, I haven't got the heart to tell him that I'm not this man we're speaking to. How can the two of you get so mixed up?
I've got no idea, JB, but it happens all the time. They come up to you and say, oh, you know, I'm a massive fan. I'm a huge fan of yours, Moz. I'm like, yeah, well, I'll go and let Moz know that.
It's a compliment, though. It's a compliment.
Is it? Is it a compliment for me? Yeah, he's a better looking man.
Matty, we've got to move along. The game's about to get underway. Thanks for popping by in the box.
No worries, boys. Have a good call.
Matty Boyd from the Western Bulldogs there. Thank you. Thanks, Matty. Good on you, mate. We're just about ready to get underway. He is indeed. Nathan Brown has joined us. Welcome to you, Brownie.
Thanks, Brian. I've been listening. Very, very funny. You get funnier
by the way,
as you get older.
Yeah, all Australian, that man
you
last
go,
year.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. All Australian.
Yep. Duck just loves putting on the mayonnaise.
shatter. The footy's on Triple M.
Triple M rocks football.